If you wake up and check the pollen count first thing every morning, today's edition of Please Explain is for you. Actually, you're far from being alone. Some 50 million Americans suffer from allergies of one kind or another, according to National Institutes of Health statistics. Dr. Clifford W. Bassett, the Medical Director of Allergy and Asthma Care of New York, joins us now. He's also a faculty member of the New York University School of Medicine and a clinical assistant professor of medicine and otolaryngology at the Long Island College Hospital and SUNY in Brooklyn. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Great to be with you.
We also invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call, 212-433-9692. Leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. It'll also reach us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Dr. Bassett, what's the medical definition of an allergy?
Well, that's a very simple question, but maybe it's not so tricky. As you know, most allergens, whether it be a tree pollen, grass pollen, dust particle, cat dander, even piece of penicillin or so forth, are harmless. They're really harmless, and the majority of people are not affected by them. So we know that if one adult parent has an allergy, the chance that the child will develop, it's about 1 out of 3. And if both parents have allergies, well, those are patients in my practice, and it's likely at about 7 or 8 out of 10 will develop allergies. So a lot of it is genetic. And in the first visit, we do something called an allergy family tree. So I want to know about my individual patient that's coming to see me, but I also want to know about the family members. And if you are allergic to a substance such as a pollen, your immune system goes into overdrive and tries to destroy it as if it was a bad guy or an invader. In attempting to do that, it creates a bad problem called hypersensitivity, and histamine is the typical chemical most people are familiar with because of the word antihistamine, which is a drug that antagonizes or blocks histamine. And histamine is an inflammatory chemical that the body produces in response to an allergy attack. And the release of histamine causes a variety of symptoms, both runny nose, sneezing, itchiness as a result of dilatation of the capillaries in your nose and so forth. And as a result of this, people have a variety of seasonal symptoms, indoor symptoms that bother them. And as you mentioned, 40 or 50 million people have it. The good news about allergies is they're here to stay. We need to talk about Mother Nature, and we need to talk about how we can work together with our environment. But the bottom line is we will develop today a proactive strategy so people can learn how to detect if they have an allergy, what the allergen may be, and what are some simple and long-term strategies to make them better and allergy-free this summer, if at all possible. So I'm a survivor of an allergy survivor myself. I have a son with allergy and asthma that's now an elite athlete. And the bottom line is allergies do not discriminate, but we need to be proactive and develop an allergy asthma plan so we can deal with Mother Nature this year and deal with the things that are out there as a result of global climate change, longer pollen seasons. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why we're seeing more allergies than ever before. But the bottom line is it's treatable, and it's something we can control with proper attention, evaluation. And the first step is to find out, do I have an allergy? And if I do, what are my options in terms of modification of my environment and over-the-counter versus prescription remedies and other things designed to stamp out the fire and make you as allergy-free as possible?
Now, are you suggesting that asthma is also an allergy?
In most cases, probably somewhere between half or two-thirds or more of those with asthma may have allergic asthma. They may have pets. They may live near a highway where they have more carbon monoxide. They may have exposure to pollution and a variety of things that we know in children out of the University of California, that kids who go to school near an urban area, near a highway, they may be more likely to have air pollution-affected respiratory symptoms, including the risk of asthma. So the environment and genetics come together in an equation whether you will develop allergy or asthma. But a great deal of asthma is allergic triggered, and we know that the younger individuals who have asthma are more likely to have what we call allergic asthma. And the good thing about it is with proper evaluation and testing, we can often pick up the allergic and asthma triggers to try and modify and reduce symptoms. With asthma, we're still seeing 4,000 people die each year, both adults and children, of asthma in the U.S., and we're doing a much better job in treating them or preventing them from having to go to the ER and so forth. But there's a lot more work to do, and asthma is on the rise. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why we're seeing this global expansion of allergy and asthma everywhere today with your your guests, and I'm happy to be with you today and talk about a topic that's important, relevant, and very near and dear to my heart.
Well, since you brought up the global aspect, do allergies vary around the world depending on the environment and other factors?
Is
genetic predisposition different among some people in Asia or South America than it would be in the United States?
Well, when you have the allergic predisposition, we call that atopy, and that's from Latin. And that means that you have an allergic or genetic risk of becoming allergic, whether it be hay fever, indoor allergies, pet allergies, food allergies, asthma, and so forth. That risk exists. We know that because of longer climate seasons. That means that the allergy season in the spring is starting several weeks early. It's going four weeks longer in the fall, and that's creating a longer time for those who are genetically predisposed to be able to be exposed to pollen, specifically these 40 to 50 million or more people that have pollen allergies both here in the United States and throughout the world.
So are seasonal allergies always caused by pollen of some kind?
Well, we're talking about seasonal allergies now because it's very apropos because we're right in the middle of the spring season here in New York City, among other areas of the country. But the bottom line is, these are the things that are going on right now. Because of climate change, we're seeing warmer weather, more carbon dioxide. That tells many plants to become bigger plants, grow bigger, and produce more pollen. We know that one ragweed plant produces 1 billion pollen grains. And with global climate change, carbon dioxide levels going higher and higher, especially in urban areas, that may be three or four times the amount, and that's just one plant itself. So we're seeing longer pollen seasons, we're seeing more pollen production from plants, and we're also seeing the pollen itself perhaps being even supercharged, more potent than it used to be. Finally, we're seeing an overplanting of male plants, and I refer to that as the battle of the sexes. In New York City 50 years ago, we had elm, which was not a very allergenic plant, and now we have a lot more male plants that are more likely to produce pollen and cause allergy misery. Not only in New York City, but many urban areas, there seems to be an overplanting of male plants, and as a result of that, again, another reason why we're seeing so many patients that say, I've never had allergies before, but now I'm really suffering, and it's unusual for them, but it's not unusual to see them in our practice here in New York City. Every day of the week, we're seeing people of all ages that have never had allergies before, especially over the last 3 to 5 years. We had to understand some of the reasons why, or at least some of the theories why, and how we could mitigate that and educate people about best practices.
Our guest on today's Please Explain Look at Allergies is Dr. Clifford W. Bassett, the Medical Director of Allergy and Asthma Care of New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, what happens inside a body when we have an allergic response to something, to pollen, for example? If we take a breath and inhale pollen through our mouths or our nose, what's happening?
Well, when a person encounters a pollen or an allergen, the body reacts by releasing chemicals, which we refer to as a hypersensitivity reaction. And as a result of histamine production, other chemicals, these things are trying to fight us and protect us. But what they do is they cause itchiness, they cause sneezing, they cause breathing difficulties, specifically with allergy-triggered asthma.
Our eyes can water.
Right. In fact, one of the major symptoms we face each year is watery, itchy eyes that drive people crazy. And we know 71% of individuals who have contact lenses during the allergy season have pollen allergies that are not well controlled, cannot wear their lenses for a period of weeks and months. And that could be very problematic. We also know there's something called the allergy face. It's not just what you feel, it's how you look to other people. People who have allergies typically will have a variety of facial symptoms on their face, such as puffiness under their eyelids. We refer to that as allergic shiners. 90% of our female patients that came in to the office, we did a study about 3 or 4 years ago that was put out in the New York City newspaper. We found that they were using concealer, foundation, and cosmetics to cover up the puffiness, when all we needed to do in most cases was do diagnostic testing, find out if they had allergies or sinus problems, try and modify and treat that to get them feeling better and looking their very best. So it's not just how you feel, but it's quality of life, how you sleep, alertness, cognitive performance during the day. And we know that if allergies are not well controlled in children and adolescents, it can affect learning in the classroom. So it's really an issue that affects quality of life, whether it be a child, adolescent, or adult. And we really want to educate people. If they're having symptoms, get tested. It's very simple. They could see an allergist near you. The American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology has a wonderful website to find an allergist that's board certified, wherever you may be, and educational information. And that's allergy and asthma relief. org.
Well, how do you determine whether you are allergic to one thing or another? For example, I remember when somebody was being tested for strawberry allergy many, many years ago, she was injected with a little bit of strawberry, and we looked to see if bumps developed. Is that the way it's still being done today?
Yes. As allergists, we have very simple, reliable, virtually painless inside-the-office testing referred to as a skin prick test, also known as a puncture test or a prick test. And the skin is pricked with a very small amount of an allergen, whether it be tomato, eggplant, tree pollen, peanut allergen, and we take about 10 or 20 minutes, and if the localized reaction becomes itchy, red, or puffy or swollen, it may indicate allergic sensitization and subsequently may indicate whether you have a seasonal or indoor allergy, food allergy, and the like. The alternative test is a blood test, and that's usually done at a laboratory, and they're measuring something called IgE, which is an allergic antibody to specific allergens, whether it be a food or environmental allergen. Finally, wear a patch test. Both allergists and dermatologists may be prepared to do these for people with skin allergies who may have eczema or contact dermatitis to find out whether you're truly allergic to products that you're using, fragrances, metal, nickel, and so forth, piercing, and that's on the rise as well. Even gold allergy is in the top 20 now as far as causing skin allergies. So we're really equipped to understand what the allergy load is like for an individual, what the most effective, safest, and cost-effective test that is available to get some answers so that we can then interpret the test. And as an allergist, that's my job, not to just get a test, but to interpret the test in light of the real world and what this individual suffers going through to come up with a plan that meets their needs that really makes sense, that's logical.
Now, are histamines present in all of those allergies, whether we're talking about pollen or gold allergies or eggplant or tomato?
Histamine, as I mentioned before, is an inflammatory chemical that the body releases as the body perceives you're having allergic reaction. When we do the skin testing, it's a simulated response on the arm to simulate what the immune system is actually doing at a much deeper level. And we use that as a way to assess skin reactivity, skin sensitization and skin allergy or inhalant allergy. And the purpose of these skin tests is to give us a window into your immune system and find out, am I allergic? Am I reacting? And how do I modify that either with medications or other means to try and rectify the problem? And when you have allergies, you're not underactive, you're overactive. Your immune system is overactive and overstimulated, and we really just try and bring it back to normal. One of the few treatments there are that work is allergy immunotherapy or allergy injections, allergy drops, sublingual drops that are available now. And these work long-term to try and make you more tolerant to the things that you're allergic to so that the symptoms can dissipate and hopefully go away with time. And allergy immunotherapy or immune treatments such as these have been around for almost 90 or 100 years, and they're the only immune treatment we have that's designed specifically to decrease and stop the progression of allergic disease, decrease the progression of asthma, and so forth. So it's a very powerful tool in the right individual, whether it be the new self-disintegrating sublingual tablets that are now approved over the last month or so.
Over the counter?
These are prescription items for grass pollen allergy and ragweed allergy. We have three products that are now approved for home administration of sublingual self-disintegrating tablets for the treatment of seasonal allergy to either tree or ragweed pollen. And that complements what we already have for many years, which are allergy shots, allergy injections, and in some cases, sublingual drops as well. But the one that's FDA approved right now is allergy injections or immunotherapy, followed by these new products for grass pollen and ragweed pollen allergy that are sublingual disintegrating tablets that you take orally at home. And that's usually done with consultation of an allergist that's trained to evaluate and manage this type of medication that's relatively new and was approved by FDA in the past 4 to 6 weeks or so.
Although none of it is over the counter.
And you need to obviously be evaluated for which is the right treatment for the right patient, for the right reason, for the right individual.
Okay, let's take a call. Jeff, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I've been a lifelong sufferer of allergies, mainly pollen, ragweed, cats, things like that. And I have a couple of questions. In the early part of my life, I was getting regular allergy shots, which seemed to help for a period of time. But more recently, as I've gotten older, I've seemed to grown out of some of the allergies, or the symptoms are lessened except for peak periods of the during the year. And I was wondering, is it possible to manage the symptoms of allergies through avoiding certain types of food? So for me, if I cut back on dairy products, as an example, if I cut it out completely, it really significantly reduces the symptoms of sneezing and itchy eyes and runny nose and that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering if there's something to it, or if that's psychosomatic. And my second question is, you mentioned something about always having bags under your eyes, or I think you call it shiner eyes or something like that. I have that problem. I have that all the time. People are always telling me, you know, you look like you haven't slept all night, when I feel, you know, I had a very restful sleep. And I'm wondering how I can get rid of those things.
Thanks for calling us, Jeff.
Well, you got a lot of stuff there. In fact, I think we could talk all day about all of these, but briefly, let me break it down to a couple of things. These allergic shiners or puffiness under eyelids, and I'm assuming you're not a workaholic like all of us and you're not getting less than 7 hours sleep a night, which is highly unlikely. We're all in that category. But what happens is, because it's venous congestion under the skin, you get that purplish or the lines or the puffiness. And with proper evaluation, we can sometimes determine if there's a sinus problem, sinus congestion as a result of that. Also, allergies can give some tip-top cells signs that you may have a line in the top, in the middle part of your lower eyelid, and these creases can talk about whether you have eczema or allergy. Very frequently, when you're properly treated, you can breathe better at night. And the reason that you may be sleepy during the daytime and not as alert is, when you get a cold, you don't sleep well at night. You don't get that great deep sleep versus light sleep. And that's why you can have a cold, sleep for 10 hours, and wake up and feel tired and lousy, because you're not getting that great restorative REM sleep. And so when you have allergies, and especially in children in the classroom, and this has been demonstrated time and again, if you're properly controlled and you can breathe better at night and your nose is not obstructive, you're going to get a better quality sleep. And that's probably the reason why during the allergy season, many of my patients will come in and say, Dr. Bassett, during the season I feel tired, probably because their nose is obstructed, they're congested at night, and they're not getting that great restorative sleep, like they're on vacation, and the next day they feel tired. So by treating the allergies, making you feel better, and hopefully making you look better as far as your appearance goes. And by the way, 83% of individuals, according to a recent study, found that poorly controlled allergies has a dramatic impact on your love life. And that's no joke.
Now, he also wondered whether changing your diet can affect your reactions.
We do know that there's a variety of people, and I'm one of them, 50% or more people with seasonal allergies to tree pollen, ragweed pollen, and other pollen allergies will have a cross reaction. And when they eat apple, pear, stone fruits, cherry, kiwi, hazelnut, almond, the list goes on and on. It's on our website. Basically, these foods may make people feel like they have itchiness in their throat. It's known as oral allergy syndrome. And they also have worsening of their seasonal allergies. So a cup of coffee with hazelnut might be enough to throw you over. Collectively, we know that adults don't have a lot of food allergies. It's probably less than 3%. In children, it may be up to 8% because of formula issues during the first couple years of life. But if you're having cow's milk causing nasal congestion, post-nasal drip, stuffiness, abdominal symptoms, you should certainly have an evaluation for food allergy and food intolerance. Food intolerance is actually more common than food allergy, and that includes lactose intolerance, not being able to tolerate certain foods or spicy foods or preservatives. So it's very important to have an evaluation if you're having symptoms and you want some clarification and insight. And that's what I want my patients to have. I want them to have insight, answers, and develop a collaboration so we can get them feeling better and getting that insight so they understand what are the triggers. And sometimes it's not that clear, and we need to resort to certain diagnostic tests, elimination diets that sometimes can be very helpful in clarifying the food allergy symptom connection. And even with adolescents, sometimes I'll see kids with brain fog or attention issues or behavioral issues, and they may have a food intolerance like celiac disease or gluten intolerance. So it's very complicated, but the bottom line is sometimes elimination diets can be very helpful in trying to corroborate or kind of really confirm what the issues are at hand. And a food diary is also very helpful for many, many reasons. And food allergies are on the rise in adults. And it's changing, and we have different patterns of what foods people are allergic to today, which is different than 10 years ago. So hopefully we'll spend some time in talking about that as well. But hopefully that answers your question. You need a little bit of bona fide testing, whether it's a gastroenterologist evaluating bloating and so forth, or whether it's an allergist looking at whether you have a food allergy or food intolerance. It's very prevalent. I think it's very important, especially if you're having symptoms, to get it checked out. And I think you'll be surprised that we have some very good diagnostic procedures and studies. They're very simple to do to provide some answers for you.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with more calls and address some of the other issues that you have brought up, Dr. Bassett. My guest is Dr. Clifford W. Bassett, Medical Director of Allergy and Asthma Care of New York, a faculty member of the New York University School of Medicine, and a clinical assistant professor of medicine and otolaryngology at the Long Island College Hospital in SUNY in Brooklyn. A number, 212-433-9692. Write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we are back with today's Please Explain Look at Allergies with Dr. Clifford W. Bassett, the Medical Director of Allergy and Asthma Care of New York. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Our next caller is Lori from Riverhead. Hi, Lori.
Hey, how are you guys?
I'm well. I don't have any allergies. Do you?
My question is actually, I normally have bad pollen allergies every spring and into the fall. And this year, while everyone seems to be suffering, I, knock on wood, have been fine. So I'm just wondering, is it something different about the pollen maybe this year? Or, you know, how did I luck out on this one?
And can I add to that? Do people change? Do they, people who have been allergy-free, suddenly develop allergies as they get older? Or as Lori seems to suggest in our previous caller, sometimes lose allergies that they may have had in the past?
Well, I'm going to let you on a little secret. There's only one thing I know that's an advantage of getting older and aging, and that's allergy. In many cases, of course, that's not the case in my practice because I have an office full of people that are suffering that really have allergies. However, in general, people tend to outgrow or their allergies tend to dissipate with aging. So that's the good news. The reality also is whatever is happening with Lori's nose, it gets pollen getting into her eyes or nose. It may be pollen that she's not sensitive to, and that's why it's so very important to see an allergist and have individualized testing so that we can pinpoint what her triggers are. She may have pollens that are not prevalent over the last month or two, but prevalent sort of down the road in the summer and the fall. So by having what I create for my patient, an allergy or pollen calendar, it's very helpful. And also, you're talking about pollen. We're talking about the wedding season, gardening, and so forth. There are a variety of plants and flowers that are actually better and not so good for people who have allergies, and better, less allergy-provoking choices would include azalea, begonia, bougainvillea, cacti, daffodil, iris, orchid, pansy, petunia, crocus, freesia, viola, impatiens, and some roses, especially the hybrid tea variety, violet, tulip, and so forth, orchid. And then avoiding certain ones such as dahlias, at least many of them, gerberas, sunflower, baby's breath, the single variety flower, gardenia, jasmine, have very strong scents such as lavender, lilac, hydrangea, and so forth. So by working with a florist, if you have an outdoor event, and understanding Mother Nature, or if you want to garden this year, take a couple steps back and just try and protect yourself, be proactive, and understand what your triggers may be. And I'm glad to see that Lori is doing well this season. But again, her allergy recipe and allergy formula is based upon her own individual testing. And I think that's the first step in understanding what it's all about and why our immune system does what it does, to be a little bit smarter in what I call allergy aware or have a high allergy IQ.
Our next caller is Bob from Rego Park. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Leonard. How you doing, guy? I'd like to ask you a question. You know, I don't usually get allergies, but this year I had my mucus in my left eye, tiredness, itchiness in the throat. How do you distinguish whether it's an allergy or whether I had a virus and a cold? I can't even tell what I had.
Well, typically with an allergy, there's a pattern. Every time I go to Central Park or I go to Prospect Park or I go to my local garden, I feel it within minutes and hours. My eyes are itchy. They're red. I'm sneezing. My throat feels itchy. I take an antihistamine, an over-the-counter antihistamine that might be designed to try and put out the fire. I take some eye drops. I feel better. That's indicative of an allergy. I have allergic parents. Every time the pollen count is high, it seems to correlate with itchy throat, sneezing, congestion. That's a pattern. When you have a cold or a sinus problem, it usually comes on pretty suddenly. It usually goes away 7 to 10 days, maybe associated with a discharge, color, loss of appetite. So, again, the constellation of symptoms revolve around the letter I, itch. Itchiness is a hallmark, typically, of allergy. You can have red eye, pink eye, and so forth from viral infections. And if you do have a discharge around your eye and it's persistent, bothersome, and you're concerned, you go see, obviously, your eye care doctor, you know, for an examination and make sure that you get the right treatment. But many patients are not sure they have an allergy, and that's why these tests are very helpful in pinpointing what your triggers may be. And especially, as I mentioned just to you a few minutes ago, if there's a pattern, if this happens every April and May when the pollen season is high, but you're pretty good during the winter, it sounds like you may have more of a seasonal allergy or an ocular allergy.
Now, what about in newborns? Are people born allergic? Do the allergies show up in the first few months? And the kid can't, if they do have allergies, they can't tell you what their problem is.
Well, allergies usually take several years to kick in, and that's why you don't have a lot of extreme allergies in early newborns and so forth. In fact, most allergists don't really see newborns because it takes a little time for the immune system to catch up. But the allergic march refers to an individual family that may have allergy, and it may refer to having eczema, asthma, hay fever, food allergy, and so forth that develops over the first 3 to 5 years of age. We also know that it's almost like a Woody Allen movie. If your immediate environment, the first year or so of life, is too clean and there's not enough germ, or we'd say in New York City, there's not enough schmutz or dirt, that may not be beneficial. So keeping a kid away from a kid that has a cold early on may actually be a disservice, and actually being exposed to germs and gram-negative bacteria and all kinds of things the first year or so, and not over-sanitizing the environment, that's referred to as the hygiene hypothesis, may lead to a healthier immune system, and it may actually reduce over some time reduction in the likelihood of developing allergy and asthma. And so these things we're looking at now in terms of how do you prevent allergy and asthma? Are there things we could do? And we're working with researchers in terms of understanding diet, the Western diet, the environment, and all of these factors to try and make the best suggestion as far as an individual, especially if they want to bring a child into the world. What are the things they could do or know about in terms of primary prevention? And the answers are not really out there yet. But I think what you mentioned is very important for people to realize, that the first couple years of life is a very important time. And when you're over-sanitized or over-protected, you may be doing a disservice.
Mark left a question on our show page. Years ago, I read about research into a shot to give to a cat whereby the cat would no longer produce the allergen affecting so many people. That is, the animal gets the med, not the human allergy sufferer. I was hoping it might pan out, but I never heard any more about it. Have there been attempts to treat the pets of allergy sufferers?
Well, what I can say is that many people come into my practice and they say, you know, I went on the website and I found the dog I have is not going to cause an allergy. We don't have enough information or research to say which pets are better. The American Kennel Society does have a website that does have some information about certain breeds, the Obama's dog, a Portuguese water dog, Schnauzer poodle, that may have lower allergen content. But as an allergist in the real world, if you have a pet allergy to a dog or a cat, you may suffer, and it may take time. So if people adopt out a dog temporarily, they're not sure if their child will allow the pet in terms of not having allergy symptoms, it may take time for that to develop. We also know there's differences with cats. I did one study back in Brooklyn when I was an allergy fellow over 20 years ago, and I found the darker the color of the cat hair was associated with more severe allergy symptoms in people allergic to pets, such as cat, and males versus females seem to also. And this is a small study of 400 households, and we're in the process of maybe taking a look at that again in tens of thousands of people and see whether that's the case.
Hair color.
That's right. But the bottom line, as far as allergies go, there are things we can do, and I'm talking about the real world. So I love HEPA air filters, either built into a home ventilation system in your home or some room air conditioner filters that you can purchase online or at department stores that provide great ways to reduce exposure to pollen, mold, and pollutants, and as well as pet dander, and that can be very helpful. Also, we know that there are plants that clean the air, that if you can put it in your home or your business, if you're near an area where there's a lot of carbon monoxide, air pollution, and so forth, plants that NASA has, and you can look on the internet under NASA study air cleaning plants, and there's about 15 or 20 plants that will actually clean the air indoors, scrub the air of pollutants, and that can be very helpful for people wanting to live a more natural, green life.
Now, people have been writing in with all sorts of suggestions. Neti pots, iodine, local honey. One woman says that she lost her allergies after she had an operation, after some surgery. Others have wondered whether there's a link between cancer and allergies. Are all of these things just part of the, how much truth is there to any of those?
Well, let's take a look at local honey, because we often get that conversation. When you have a seasonal allergy, you're talking about pollen that's wind-pollinated. Wind-pollinated plants and flowers and trees, they're green, they're not attractive sometimes, they look weedy-like. The ones that are beautiful, that smell nice, that have bright colors, those are attracted to stinging insects. Those are insect-pollinated plants, and those are the ones that typically don't cause a lot of allergy suffering. So when it comes to honey or local honey, for the most part, studies have shown it's not really helpful in terms of eating local honey, and it really doesn't get the job done because you're dealing with a different system, insect-pollinated plants, and as a result of that, people can't really assume when they eat local honey it's going to fight their allergies effectively and provide proper treatment. Again, we look at over-the-counter prescription medications. We examine you. We do the testing. We try and understand what your individual needs are, and with proper testing to pinpoint what the treatment plan should be both now and in the future. We're looking for long-term relief, long-term cures. We're looking for people that can enjoy Mother Nature and the great outdoors, but people that also have a little insight to know what their triggers are, what their allergy equation is, and by working with an allergist, that's a uniquely wonderful way to develop a collaboration to being healthier, especially if you're one of these 40 to 60 million people that have allergies, sinus problems, asthma, and so forth. As I mentioned, the American College of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology, we're just finishing our Allergy and Asthma Awareness Month, as well as the American Allergy and Asthma Foundation of America. They have wonderful websites where people can go and learn more about a variety of allergy topics that will really help them get through the rest of the year and just be more aware of their allergies and their family allergies for proper treatment, and also questions to ask when you see your physician or a healthcare provider, lists of medications, foods that you think trigger you, so you can be a better patient and a better have a better quality visit with an allergist when you come into the office in terms of your past history.
Dr. Bassett,
a lot of this is related to the genetics and the environment, but it's important to have it down on paper and talk about some of the medications you've tried, what works and what doesn't work, and not every medication will work for every person, but there are a lot of new treatments that are here now that are on the horizon, and allergy medications have never been so effective and so safe than ever before.
Now, Dr. Bassett, we have very little time left, but I get the feeling that you do not recommend just using an over-the-counter allergy medicine. You always say you have to go to a physician.
No, over-the-counter allergy medications, including non-sedating antihistamines, provide very good relief for itchiness, sneezing, runny nose, and so forth. They may be very helpful for people with trivial or mild symptoms. If they're not working, they're not getting the job done, then you should see an allergist for testing and an appropriate care plan. It's very important to understand there are some over-the-counter remedies, nasal saline, neti pot, they're fine, but if they're not getting the job done, the symptoms are persistent, you're having infection, you're having associated breathing problems, asthma, and so forth, you should really have a proper evaluation. There are only 4,000 allergists in the entire country, and we're uniquely equipped to do the right thing for the patient, testing, evaluation, and interpretation, and really putting it all together for, you know, a better quality of life and trying to have the most allergy-friendly spring and summer that you can have.
And that website address once again?
Allergyandasthmarelief.org is the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, and there's the Allergy and Asthma Foundation of America. And our Twitter account is @AllergyReliefNY or AllergyEpidemic.com. We have a lot of information out there for people that want to learn about pollen and how to survive.
We have to leave it there,
season.
Dr. Bassett. Dr. Clifford Bassett, the Medical Director of Allergy and Asthma Care of New York, thank you so much for being on our show today.
My pleasure. Great to be with you. Looking forward to coming back at some point in the near future.